You are listening to Conversations with me, Pollyanna. 18 and older, please proceed and enjoy. Under 18, listen no further. Today's conversation features Ruby Johnson, a licensed clinical social worker and sexuality educator. Ruby has been in practice for 16 years. The last 5 years, her focus has been on sex therapy and education. She has a private practice in Plano, Texas, where she sees clients in person. Primarily, she is a coach and supporter for folks that are new, experienced, or questioning to open relationships, both in person and distance. For those who seek therapy for kink, BDSM, desire discrepancy, and infidelity in relationships, she provides services for those clients in her office primarily. Welcome, Ruby. Please share with us what got you started on the path you are on with counseling and outreach.
What got me started as a therapist is about 16 years ago, I was going to school to become a licensed chemical dependency counselor. I'm in recovery. And so at that time, I wanted to save the world, you know, save all addicts from themselves. And so I started going to Richland College, which is a community college. And then when I went to the, students with disabilities, is for lack of a better word, because I do have an addiction, they told me that LCDC is a very limited field to go into. So I decided to go into social work. And as a result of me going into social work, some of the main jobs were in psych facilities, and it just kind of progressed from there. I eventually stayed within hospital setting and et cetera, and then finally got into private practice about 5 years ago. But what keeps me there is the changes that can be made. Also, for the Black community, mental health is something that is not talked about as much. We're becoming a lot more open, you know, thanks to, you know, Black girl therapy. I get a lot of referrals from Black girl therapy. It's a system that says, hey, Black folks need counseling too. That's what keeps me there. It's a need. It's national. It's a clearinghouse for about 10,000 therapists that are folks of color, Black. And it was started by another clinician, a social worker. Social workers are just awesome, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so it was started by a licensed clinical social worker. And her goal was to have this clearinghouse of therapists who look like her. And so that's when it started about 10 years ago.
I have quite a few listeners and followers who have reached out to me over time with concerns that I share about unspoken racial divides within sex minority groups. For me, it is strange because I am physically and emotionally attracted to people regardless of aesthetics, outward aesthetics, or race. My dating sexual friendship history is a rainbow, and I like it that way. So when I see instances of this, it feels bizarre and so limiting to me and everyone else. Tell me what your thoughts are on these kinds of concerns and how we can address them.
I mean, polyamory, we want to believe that we're a very enlightened group, you know, and we are enlightened in many ways. I don't want to say the word enlightened, but we're different, you know, the way that we see the world, our perspectives, but we still have some of the same, we grew up with some of the same biases, prejudices, etc. And so groups migrate to groups that are like them. And for me, as a Black woman in Dallas, Texas, when I go to the bigger groups that are more, you know, most known, like Dallas Polyamory or North Texas Polyamory, I'm one of few Black people. And there is a DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth Black and Poly Community. It's a group of 70 strong, very, very community-oriented, very, very much about bringing the community together. And one of the things that someone said this perfectly is, I'd rather be in a group where they don't ask me about my hair. So going to groups like Dallas Polyamory, which is predominantly white people, and posting something about intersectionality, you know, oppressive systems, and they're like, what does this have to do with polyamory? I'm like, well, shit. You know, it has, can I cuss?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, it has a lot to do with polyamory. Just that question itself, you know, it's kind of limited. It's very, very privileged, you know. And privileged to me is a word that is coming back into my vocabulary as a result of me being here at Southwest Love Fest. I had some awesome conversations with people and some very raw, you know, conversations with individuals who are doing their own self-introspection. And someone said this sentence, and I'm going to probably repeat it like 3 or 4 times. White privilege is intoxicating, you know, and it's intoxicating because there is that opportunity to have the one-up and not deal with the othering. If you can pass and blend, it's a lot easier than, you know, having that conflict with others and falling into stereotypes and et cetera.
And I also think it's kind of easier to deny and dismiss mm-hmm. than it is to have those uncomfortable conversations where we acknowledge the shortcomings, the social shortcomings, mm-hmm. the cultural shortcomings that we have. Mm-hmm. And it can get exhausting when you talk about, I mean, dating polyamorously, that sounds uh-huh. exhausting. Mm-hmm. So talking about, oh, we've got all these other things further to come. Mm-hmm. I get it. I get why people are kind of predisposed to that. But I feel like it's such important conversations. Mm-hmm. Especially now, in the climate we have right mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. going on with racial divides globally.
Right. You know, and it's like this current administration has made it okay to be overtly racist again. You know, the microaggressions that turned by, you know, Mr. Wang, Dr. Wang, it came about in the early 90s. I'm looking at Liz over there. It came about in the 90s as a result of some of his experiences. And he was it was during Clinton, yes. And so he was talking about how racism is still prevalent, it's still strong, but it's now more covert. Now we're back to overt.
Right, it's always been there. It's not like it's just come back into popularity. It's always been there. Mm-hmm. It's just people were realizing it wasn't as popular to say, and now they feel the freedom. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so shocking to people. Mm-hmm. And I think that it was, again, this dismiss and deny that it's mm-hmm. still there.
Right, absolutely. You know, we want to believe that we are post-racist. That's what I say, post-racial. We want to believe that because we have, you know, had a black president. Look, like that one black friend. We have one black president, so we're okay. You know, and it doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't. Absolutely.
You are doing a presentation this weekend on individual power. For me, as a solo poly and single female in the lifestyle, I have done a lot of work on myself over the years to discover and own my personal power. Out of necessity, really, but the benefits of that process have echoed to other areas of my life in amazing ways. What kind of power do we wield as individuals, and how can we tap into it?
On the individual level, what we can do is simply recognize that those biases and prejudices are there and challenge them. And, you know, conflict is a beautiful thing. That's where growth and change comes from. And as an individual, we can empower ourselves as a result of me coupling with you. Mm-hmm. Coupling. You know, me being connected with you, what we can do as individuals together is very, very powerful. As me being a black woman, you being a white woman, you can probably get into spaces and people hear you, you know, and people will hear me, you know, in certain spaces because it's not for black folk, you know, and I'm going to speak as, you know, for me personally, I don't like people talking at me. I like for you to listen to my narrative and listen to my story. And it's really difficult when there's a room full of white people. There's 2 black folks in the audience. This is what the dynamic was. The equipment wasn't working. And so at my talk earlier today, I was really, really uncomfortable because I didn't have my PowerPoint, you know, to guide me. And it forced me to get a lot more vulnerable to try to connect to the audience. But one black woman connecting to an audience of white people, that's some Herculean shit right there, you know, and it's a huge divide. And people come there to have an experience of, people are hungry. They want to understand how power works in our lives, and power is something that is very, not insidious, but it permeates in many different areas, in many different ways. So as an individual professionally, you know, I'm a therapist in Dallas, So the power that I may have as an individual is to be that face, like that beacon for people to know, hey, you can come to me and get help, just to be accessible, to be transparent with who I am and my own struggles, you know, not to say, I got this shit. Don't worry, I got you. I can have you on many different ways, but I cannot tell your story. I cannot tell you that this shit is not going to hurt. I cannot tell you that there won't be challenges and difficulties growing up in a marginalized community as a marginalized person who is further and further and further disenfranchised. So we just got to acknowledge that and make it very clear that some of our own stuff does disempower really quickly. Yeah, I like what they called it in my graduate school. They call it triple threat. It's some little word that they use as, you know, race, gender, and class. You know, Kimberly Crenshaw, you know, coined the term intersectionality as a result of critical race theory. And it talks about those levels of marginalization and how you get pushed more and more and more to the peripheral where people don't see you, you know, and you're invisible and they don't recognize that you're out there struggling on the side. But people tend to focus on what's right in their face, you know, and in a community where you hang out, you know, I don't know what the racial dynamic is within your community. People are going to see and acknowledge what's right there in front of them. And I mean, and once again, I was talking to Teresa Love, and she's one of the folks that is a leader in the Dallas area with Black and Poly, DFW Polyam and Black. She will correct me on that. DFW Polyam and Black. I had a conversation with her about how can we bridge those divides with other leaders. And I said, it can be something that is look very cliquish. And she goes, what's wrong with being cliquish? It's a self-preservation, right? And having as a unit and as many people is not as isolating, you know, in a group where people look like you. You don't feel like you're in the sea of milk, you know?
Right.
And it's comforting to know that there's other people who have some of the same struggles, and I don't have to define race.
Alrighty, loves, we're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of this amazing conversation. Quote, 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 quote me. It's time for the quote of the day, my loves. Quote me. As usual, we're taking a quick little break with our quote of the day, then we'll be right back to our conversation with Ruby. Today's quote comes from account on Instagram, spiritual.slut.1111. This was a post she had, and I just thought the quote was so great that we'd use it today for our quote of the day. Your scars are someone else's signs of hope. Danielle Laparte. One of the guarantees in life for all of us is that we will all experience pain. Not something that we can avoid. And another part of the life experiences we have is that we process that pain and we grow from it. Or maybe we hurt for a much longer period of time. Some things are harder just to get over. And it can really be difficult to see the beauty in pain, to see how it helps us grow and form who we are. It's counterintuitive to think about pain, negative things, really, like that. But everything that happens to us, the good and the bad, can all be lessons, equally. And in some ways, when we experience pain, it can be the best lessons, the hardest, of course, but the best lessons we learn and we carry with us. This is certainly true in relationships. I think of the worst breakups I've had, and as much as a part of me hates to say it, those are the experiences that helped me grow the most, that helped strengthen me the most. One of my little Care Bear sayings of my arsenal of Care Bear sayings is that it's not the mistakes that we make that define us, it's how we handle them, whether or not we choose to grow from them, to turn those lemons into lemonade, if you will. And what this quote really reminds me of beyond that is the beauty in honesty and vulnerability. It's hard to admit, I think, that we are weak, that we haven't been perfect, but none of us have been. And that's the truth. And when we can really be honest about that, we can learn to trust each other. With this show and in everything I do, I have tried to be as authentic as possible throughout. And part of that is because through the pain in my life, I've learned the strength, the great strength that comes in vulnerability, in admitting that I've done wrong in the past, that I haven't been perfect, or when I'm in the midst of it, that I don't know what I'm doing. There's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know, or I'm not sure, or I need to figure this out. That conveys that you're thinking about it with your humanity in mind, and also indicates that you are more likely to grow stronger through whatever experience you're going through. So when we all set that example for each other, it's a great gift. It's a gift allowing ourselves to process something in a healthy, in a productive way, and it's a great gift to just, in and of itself, set the example that it's okay to be truly human. It's okay to mess up. It's okay that we've been hurt before. It's just part of living life. Hope you enjoyed today's quote. Let me know what your thoughts are, and if you want to add to a quote of the day, coming up on a future episode. Thank you for sharing another amazing quote so I can share with everyone else. Have some words of wisdom that inspire you? Email them to this philosophy-hungry sapiosexual at withpollyanna.com/contact. Quote me. The quote. Tell us about the services you provide.
There's many. I'm an educator, and I go out within a community, and I will educate speaking a language. You know, I go within churches, and I do things to where I'm able to be an educator and just partake in or give information about sexual health. Additionally, I'm a therapist. I work individually, groups, families. I do sex therapy also. There's other elements, you know, depression, anxiety. My primary group is, you know, kinky, black, queer. You know, that's the majority of my practice. That's what that looks like. It's amazing how black girl therapy, people say, oh, I have anxiety. Get them in front of you. I have a girlfriend and a boyfriend, and, you know, and just knowing that those services are available. Additionally, I have Poly Dallas Millennium, which is a symposium. We're coming up on our fifth annual symposium in 2020. 2019, we didn't have it. I had some illness, but in 2020, we're coming back strong. So I have the symposium. I also like to write. So those are some of the services. I'm probably forgetting some things, but.
You are a board member for the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom, NCSF. What NCSF projects are you working on now?
Consent Summit. That is something that is a passion of mine, you know, consent, power, and this just challenging the disembodiment of the individual. And so I primarily work with Consent Summits. We're having one in Dallas in February of 2020. That's my passion. Also outreach, just simply going within communities, educating about consent. So it's around the consent is my advocacy.
What is on the horizon for you after this weekend?
What's on the horizon for me after this weekend? Sleep.
Yeah.
You know, it's 2-hour difference. It's killing me. I finally slept today. Oh. but what's on the horizon for me is there's a couple of other conferences that I'm going to. I just got invited to go to Chicago to do this variety interview thing. And so I'm taking this year and I'm going to slow it down and I'm going to write a book. And I'm excited about writing this book. It's telling my story. I'm going to do it in a series of essays. Susan Wright is actually going to help me with that. And just talk about little pieces of myself and tell my story. And I'm going to tell it in a way that if someone sees an essay, you know, they can say, this essay will help you. This is someone who's been where you are. And so that's one of my next projects. Recovery has been a recovery of a whole lot of things, and sometimes it's about a discovery of a whole lot of things. And the person who introduced me to polyamory is actually in recovery. I met them in 2011, 2010 or 2011, And I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. I'm like, what the hell is that? That's that white folks stuff. You know, that's what they do around the way. I don't know what that is. And it was a struggle for me. And I had to go on my own journey and talk to other people. And that was so important. And I got introduced to polyamory through this individual. And then I discovered how freeing it is. Just, it's a fundamental lens core change in the way I see the world. It's not as oppressive for me. I'm able to have more courage and to take challenge, you know, take risk, because this is a this relationship dynamic is very risky. You know, it's risky in so many ways. And so that's a muscle that I have, you know, strengthened, is to be able to take risk. And it's really hard to do that. I also discovered that I had some biases of my own around, you know, sexual orientation, etc. And it's through my own internalized homophobia. I found that out. That's going to be one of my essays. Because I denied my own sexual desires and attractions based upon what mama and daddy said. You know, my mom, we're watching a TV show and, you know, there's maybe another man kissing another man, you know, back in the day that was, ooh, my mom was like, oh, that's nasty. And those are the kind of messages that I hear, that I heard. So me being polyamorous has opened my eyes, you know, to my own biases. It has relieved me from a whole lot of my own sexual trauma. I have walked through that. I found my kinky side. I've always been kinky. I met folks who like to be pegged, you know, and I'm all about pegging. I was pegging when I didn't know what pegging was, you know. It's so odd. 18 years old, I was walking someone around with a leash. I just thought it was how you have sex, you know, and so, which I found very interesting. But I have been introduced to a whole new world around that. And I love Delisha Shaw with Afrosexology. She did a keynote at PDM in 2018, and she talked about the oppressor within and how you can be liberated through pleasure. And that's another thing I got introduced to, what pleasure actually means. And it's not just about, you know, clitoral stimulation or fellatio. I mean, pleasure is just about pleasure in life, period, and how we embrace it. And once we free ourselves, we're actually able to feel the textures of pleasure. Delisha Shaw, she's a bad mamma jamma.
Ruby, how can my audience learn more from you, connect with you, or follow you?
I am on Twitter and Instagram at Black Sex Geek. My website is blacksexgeek.net. My email address is rubyjohnsonlcsw@gmail.com. And the best way to find me is simply on Twitter or Instagram.
Thank you so much, Ruby, for joining us. This was wonderful.
Wanted to be sure to finish up today's episode with a little bit of business, some exciting stuff. Yesterday afternoon in Arizona time, but late night in London, I was one of the call-in guests for the Mobeen Azar show on BBC Asia Radio. It was a really fun experience. Hopefully I'll be on again with them soon. We talked about friends with benefits, my experiences, and then also just others' opinions on the panel. This is a really well-produced show, and I was so honored to be a part of it. That connection is thanks to my friend Sean Jameson at Bad Girls Bible. If you haven't checked out his podcast, be sure you do. I was on there as a guest, actually. I think it was on New Year's Eve or something like that. It's kind of a really cool day. I was on my episode with Sean. So make sure you check him out and the Mobeen Azar show. I'll be leaving a link so that you can listen to the playback on all my social media and on my website as well. And of course, as usual, I'll leave all my suggested links, including that one, in the details of today's episode.
Did you like today's episode? Rate, review, and subscribe. Make sure you check out my website left in the show details, withpollyanna.com, for everything Pollyanna all the time. Want to support what I'm doing and become part of the inner circle? Visit patreon.com/withpollyanna and become a patron. As always, be good to yourself and be good to others. Laters.
If you ask in, I can share my everything except for where my past been. Passion was less than passive on the path in. Now it's all an act in a bad scene. Just swing them hips over here. All the ladies be like,
hey.